battle stage one, so we just have to keep these fights up no matter what. Our last speaker on today's panel is Gerald Sanders, and he's been active in socialism for most of his life. He's registered with the Peace and Freedom Party, and he's been in the Black Panthers, has run for numerous offices. He's currently a member of the Oscar Grant Committee, and is also run for office on the Peace and Freedom ticket for Congress and State Treasurer. And it's our honor to have him here to speak to us on behalf of the Free Bolivia campaign. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This presentation actually is designed to help facilitate actions in solidarity with all, we call them class war prisoners or victims of capitalist repression, and in general, and also Mumia in specific. Now look, one of the ways that you can tell when you look at the legacy of an organization is the work that they put in. And unfortunately, in the United States, the American left has failed the test on political prisoners. Because of all the ways that the 1% terrorizes new prospects for revolutionaries, people who want to become revolutionaries, is the way that they treat and deal with political prisoners. When you see the way political prisoners are treated, that gives you a sense of what's in store for you if you step across that line. So it's a rather dire situation. There are still 15 Black Panthers in prison right now. And they're all getting older. Not just the Black Panthers, but she mentioned Leonard, Gilbert, you know, from SAS, still in prison. And our political prisoners, you know, it's a real tragedy when we have a situation where a political prisoner actually dies in prison. This is an act, yet another act of terror. So we're talking about Mumia's new path to freedom. And this is why I think this is so important. Yes, I can tell you about Mumia's thoughts and stuff, but let me go over the basics, because I see many people here have already heard of Mumia. You know that Mumia joined the Philadelphia Black Panther Party and became its minister of information at the tender age of 15. All right, here talking about terror from the 1%. Here is how Panthers of the Philadelphia branch were routinely mistreated by Rizzo's police. This Rizzo was a real character. Okay. Mumia Abdul-Jamal, this former Panther, and who? Yes, and journalists, drew the wrath of Frank Rizzo, racist mayor of Philadelphia, for consistently uncovering and reporting on cases of police brutality. Here, Mumia was different from most journalists. He would always invite not only the victim of police brutality, but also the police on the same program. The police wasn't happy. Alright, on August 8, 1978, Frank Rizzo was in a combative mood at a special afternoon press conference in Philadelphia City Hall. Now this occurred after this horrible incident with the moon commune of Powell, right? After attacking the house with intense of water, police arrested the moon members and publicly Delta Africa after she had surrendered. Now just to point this out, this was supposed to be an eviction. They had 600 pigs show up at this so-called eviction. They formed a circular firing squad. Literally, I'm not exaggerating.
and they start firing to kill MOVE members who hid in the basement. Now, naturally, you form a circular firing squad. What's that? The stupid kids start shooting each other. Actually, six cops were shot, and a couple of fire department people were shot. One policeman died. Well, at City Hall, Rizzo was blunt with the press. He expected them to close ranks in support of police action, specifically what had just happened, all right? Then, from the crowd impacted reporter, the young black journalist spoke out in the resonant tones of a radio broadcaster. He raised pointed criticism and questions about the official police story that Rizzo had just laid out. Now, this is a key moment. Mayor Rizzo exploded in fury and spat out a thinly veiled threat. This is the quote. They believe what you write and what you say. And it's got to stop. And one day, I hope it's in my career, that you're going to have to be held responsible and accountable for what you do. He was pointing at Mumia Abdul-Jamal when he made that statement. Okay? Mumia was framed. In 1981, Mumia was falsely accused of murdering police officer Daniel Faulkner. In 1982, the corrupt judge Sabar framed Mumia and sentenced him to death. Now, this is where this case becomes somewhat different. I have studied numerous, I've done a lot of work on political business. The Jericho, the Black Claw, the Anarchist Black Claw, anybody that would defend political business, I was ready to work with. I worked with the Free Mumia movement, out of which grew the labor action committee to Free Mumia. I've done a considerable amount of work since 1987 in the Mumia's behalf, but also for other political prisoners. This case, though, stands out. From the day Mumia Abdul-Jamal was arrested, the Fraternal Order of Police and the state in general did all they could to silence this outstanding militant. For instance, Mumia was taken out of Mumia tried to defend himself. He had seen John Africa. He talked about it in this book on jailhouse lawyers. He had seen John Africa successfully defeat the federal government. So Mumia was trying to defend himself. Well, Judge Sago had some other ideas on that. Now, Mumia was excluded from the courtroom by Judge Sago during his trial. The same Judge Sago that points in the presence of Terry Moore Carter, the court stenographer. We're going to help them, that is the prosecution, fry the nigger. Don't want to say the word, but want to be clear what happened. This is the judge of this criminal trial. Can you imagine what kind of chance this brother had? The ultimate censorship, silencing a man in court who is fighting for his life. They had put the death sentence, you know, on the man from the beginning. This is the death sentence case. Oh, I'm sorry. Just remember that face right there. Ronald Castillo. And this is a commentary by the
After way. Over 15 years of nightmares, jail conditions, Mumia Abdul-Jamal's soul is not only intact but still flourishing. Just as the nation's soul lives. As one who has lived on the night side of this dream, unjustly imprisoned for a crime he did not commit, Mumia Abdul-Jamal speaks to us of the institutional injustice and spiritual impoverishment that permeates our culture. He reminds us of things most fellow citizens would never deny, ignore, or change.
American mass media is a marvel of technology. It is whiz-bang, smartphone glitter, and satellite wizardry. It is a master plan of methods to communicate. United States blockade a flagrant act of aggression and a blatant violation of international law. That the UN vote was reported at all in American media is amazing. For such news is more often than not passed over entirely by the American press. But where was information about the blockade itself, the effects suffered by the Cuban people, in-depth comments from United Nations delegates and leaders around the world? For a more substantive report, one had to listen to the BBC World News Service. For the rest of the world, takes note of events the U.S. prefers to ignore. American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them. Every media enterprise in America reports the drivel that Marsha Clark and Chris Darden are secret lovebirds, but the vote of a global assembly condemning these actions received only scant coverage at best. Why? The media is a source of titillation more than information. The mission of the media is to please, to comfort, and primarily to sell. When TV was developed, it was promised that every American would learn about the world in his living room. When computers were developed, wasn't it said that they would be invaluable learning tools and that children would learn more faster? National scholastic tests show otherwise, as kids master computers as toys and learn splendid hand-to-eye coordination, but little else. The media paints false pictures of the nation and the world, pictures designed to serve corporate masters and to make America look good. This feel-good media approach serves the American delusion of white supremacy, but it does not inform. When the New York Times echoes the national star, what can the word media mean? How can millions be surprised at Minister Farrakhan's enormous influence among blacks unless the media wasn't doing its job? How could they look at a million and count less than half that number? The major media, like its racist projections, is to be rejected, not consumed. For your very patronage gives it life. From death row, this is Omer Abu Jamal.
Just remember that face that Ed left a little quick. That face, Ronald Castillo. Remember that. He was the assistant DA during this trial. This major frame.
Okay.
International has come forward and said it was unfair. Okay? Please continue. All right. So I'm going to help them pry today. That's what is staying on my brain. We filed a complaint, right? What's called post-conviction relief. Post-conviction relief means after someone has been convicted, you have to complain about the process. We filed on this, and they denied. But anybody with a half a brain, how could a judge with an opinion like that fairly conduct a trial? Okay. Castillo's role as both prosecutor and judge in Mumia's case, in light of the Williams decision, opens the door to a court decision vacating, that is, overturning and dismissing all Pennsylvania Supreme Court denials of Mumia's post-conviction petition. Now get this, look. The first time Mumia goes back to court, there's a petition starting his post-conviction relief. The first judge is sitting in front of his table. I'm going to help him Friday. That's the first judge he's sitting in front of seeking post-conviction relief. Then this fellow, as the picture showed before, was the assistant DA. This was the case inside of Philadelphia in 1982. This case, the Frank Reformier, took precedent. They dug up 100 witnesses. 100 witnesses to bring this man up. Now, this guy becomes what? He becomes the head of the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. So Mumia files for, relief, for post-conviction relief. This is the judge. So he says, wait a minute, girls, you got to recuse yourself. He received why this union decision is so important is that, for once, they've come up with a positive decision. The Williams decision states the following, basically, that if you are involved in any part of the prosecution of a, you know, of a citizen and their conviction, you cannot sit on the appellate panel. It's logical, it makes sense, and you know what? It's a real opening for us. And that's what makes this case different from, let's say, Leonard, who is seeking, what's the word? Clemency from Mr. Obama, or, you know, because he's run out of appeals, right? But here, if this, we file papers on August 7th, if this goes through, Mumia will be a free man. And that matters. That matters. Okay. So, skeptics might say, but blood. What if those Supreme Court do just won't do right? They haven't done right in the past, for sure. To be honest, we don't expect them to, quote, do right on their own without external political pressure. May I remind you that in 1995, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge signed a death warrant to execute Mumia. And then what happened? There was a social explosion. Yes. The power of the working class stayed the hands of the executioner. We stopped them in their tracks with the power of labor and millions for Mumia. This particular picture is a picture of the longshoremen. Here in the Bay Area, we had one of the strongest Free Mumia movements. The longshoremen actually went on strike one day up and down the coast demanding the freedom of Mumia Abu-Jamal, a union going on strike, a political strike in support of a political prisoner. Think about this. That's the power of this case. All right, that was then. But what about now? Our skeptics are still chopping it up. Well, here's what we have now. Number one, Mumia, don't give us this one because we're running out of time. I'm sorry. Mumia is still a very excellent commentator. You know, he's talked about police brutality. I'm out of time, so I gotta, you know, I have to move on. Okay. But here's what we got. We got our young people. And we have to open the door to the youth because, like, this one demonstration, that's Black Lives Matter right there. So the social forces exist to get behind this vital case. What we need is people like you who know about the case to take this to the young people, educate them, spend time with them. And this is what will happen, please. I'll take the next one. Okay, that was the Oakland teachers. We had a day for Mumia, a whole day for Mumia in Oakland. All the schools in Oakland studied Mumia and the death penalty. That was in 1999. Go ahead. We got to take it on. Let's get on. I was going to tell you about Beyonce. But let's get this one. Let's have this commentary because this was made for this meeting. Go ahead. And the demonstration tonight.
December 9th, in town. Dear friends, I join you on a cold night, warm by your support and your struggle. For good, healthy, for clean, healthy water, for freedom, for a new world. As the struggles continue on all of these fronts, we know that unity, true unity, is power, and it takes power to fight the power. Let us join together, not to vote, but to struggle together against the wave of racist reactions flooding against us. We know what the problems are, and we know what solutions are necessary. United struggle against this monster for real change, not cosmetic change. Now, more than ever, is our time to join with each other to build movements that bring real change. On the move. Prison Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
his message to us. He knows that we're out here trying to organize. He made that specifically to support the December 9th rally and march. Okay? Thank you for that. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much, Bill.